Chapter 1. Invasion had come to the town of Adano. An American corporal ran tautly along the dirty Via Favemi. At the corner, he threw himself down. He made certain arrangements with his light machine gun and then turned and beckoned to his friends to come forward. In the Via Calabria, in another part of town, a party of three crept forward like cats. An explosion, possibly of a mortar shell, at some distance to the north, but apparently inside the town, caused them to fall flat with a splash of dust. They waited on their bellies to see what would happen. An entire platoon ducked from grave to grave in the Capuchin Cemetery, high on the hill overlooking town. The entire platoon was scared. They were out of touch with their unit. They did not know the situation. They were near their objective, which was the rocky crest, not far off, but they wanted to find out what was going on in the town before they moved on. All through the town of Adano, Americans were like this. They were not getting much resistance, but it was their first day of invasion, and they were tight in their muscles. But in one of the sulfur-loading jetties at the port, a major with a briefcase under his arm stepped from the sliding gangway of an LCEI number 9488, and he seemed to be wholly calm. "Borth," he said to the sergeant who followed him onto the jetty, "this is like coming home. How often have I dreamed this?" And he bent over and he touched the palm of his hand to the jetty, then dusted his palm off on his woolen pants. This man was Major Victor Joppolo, who had been named Senior Civil Affairs Officer of the town of Adano, representing AMGOT. He was a man of medium height, with the dark skin of his parents, who were Italians from near Florence. He had a mustache. His face was round and his cheeks seemed cheerful, but his eyes were intense and serious. He was about 35. The sergeant with him was Leonard Borth, an MP, who was to be in charge of matters of security in Adano. He was to help weed out the bad Italians and make use of the good ones. Borth had volunteered to be the first to go into town with the major. Borth had no fear about this, and he cared for nothing. He was of Hungarian parentage and had lived in many places, in Budapest, where he had taken pre-medical studies, in Rome, where he had been a correspondent for Pestalozzi, in Vienna, where he had worked in a travel agency, in Marseille, where he had been secretary to a rich exporter, in Boston, where he had been a reporter for the Herald, and in San Francisco, where he sold radios. Still, he was less than 30. He was an American citizen and an enlisted man by choice. To him, the whole war was a cynical joke, and he considered his job in the war to make people take themselves less seriously. When the major touched Italian soil, Borth said, "Ha, you're too sentimental." The major said, "Maybe, but you will be the same when you get to Hungary." "Never, not me." The major looked toward the town and he said, "Do you think it's safe now?" Borth said, "Why not?" "Then how do we go?" Borth unfolded a map case deliberately. He put a freckled finger on the celluloid cover and said, "Here. By the Via Barino as far as the Via of October 28th, and the Piazza is at the top of the Via de Via of October 28th. "October 28th, the major said. "What is that? October 28th? "Well, that's the date of Mussolini's march on Rome in 1922, Borth said. "It's the day that Mussolini thinks he began to be a big shot." Borth was very good at memory. They started walking. The major said, "I've lost all count, so what's today?" "July 10th. "We will call it the Via of July 10th. "So you're renaming streets already. Next you'll be raising monuments, Major Joppolo. First to unknown soldier, then to yourself. I don't trust you men who are so sentimental and have too damn much conscience." "Cut the kidding," the major said. There was an echo in the way he said it, as if he were a boy, having been called WOP by the others in school. In spite of the gold maple leaf of rank on the collar, there was an echo. The two men walked up the Via Barino. There was nobody in the street. All the people had either fled to the hills or were hiding in bomb shelters and cellars. The houses of this street were poor gray affairs, two-story houses of gray brick with gray shutters, all dusted over with gray dust, which had been thrown up from bomb craters and shell holes. Here and there, where a house had been hit, gray brick had cascaded into the gray street. At the corner of the third alley running off the Via of October 28, the two men came on a dead Italian woman. She had been dressed in black. Her right leg was blown off, and the flies, for some reason, preferred the dark, sticky pool of blood and the dust to her stump. "Awful," the major said, for although the blood was not yet dry, nevertheless, there was already a beginning of a sweet but vomitous odor. "It's a hell of a note," he said, "that we had to do that to our friends." "Friends?" said Borth. "That's a laugh." "It wasn't them, not the ones like her," the major said. "They weren't our enemies. My mother's mother must have been like her. It wasn't the poor ones like her. It was the bunch up there where we're going. Those crooks in the city hall." "Be careful," Borth said, and his face showed that he was teasing the major again. "You're going to have your office in the city hall. Be careful you don't get to be a crook, too. Lay off," the major said. Borth said, "I don't trust your conscience, sir. I'm appointing myself assistant conscience." "Lay off," the major said. And there was that echo. They passed a house which had been crushed by a naval shell. The major said, "Too bad. Look at that." Borth said, "Maybe it was a crook's house. How can you tell? Better forget the house and concern yourself with that." And he pointed into an alley at some horse dung and goat dung and straw and melon seeds and old chicken guts and flies. And Borth added, "No question of guilty or not guilty there, Major. It's just something to get clean. You got some business in that alley, not in that house there." "I know my business. I know what I want to do. I know what it's like to be poor, Borth." Borth was silent. He found the seriousness of this Major Joppolo something hard to penetrate. They came, in time, to the town's main square, which was called Piazza Progresso. And on that square they saw the building they were looking for. It was a building with a look of authority about it. This was not one of those impermanent-looking World's Fair architecture fascist headquarters which you see in so many Italian towns, buildings so up to the moment in design that, like airplanes, they were obsolete before they were ever finished. This was an old building, made of stone. At its second floor it had an old balcony, a place of many speeches. This building had served kings before fascists, and now was about to serve the democracies after them. In case you couldn't recognize authority in the shape of the building, there stood, in embossed bronze letters, across the front the words, Palazzo di Città. There was a clock tower on the left-hand front quarter. On top of the tower there was a metal frame which must have been designed to hold a bell. It was Baroque and looked very old, but there was no bell. On the side of the clock tower, big white letters said, Il popolo italiano ha creato col suo sangue l'impero, lo fecundero col suo lavoro e il difendere contro chinucche con le sue armi. The major pointed and said, See, Borth, even after our invasion, it says, the Italian people built the empire with their blood, will make it fruitful with their work, and will defend it against anyone with their arms. Borth said, I know you can read Italian, so can I. Don't translate for Borth. The major said, I know, but think of how that sounds today. Borth said, Sounds silly, sure. The major said, If they had seen any fruit of their work, they would have fought with their arms. I bet we could teach them to want to defend what they have. I want to do so much here, Borth. Borth said, That sounds silly, too. Remember the alley. Clean up the alleyway, sir. It's the alley that you ought to be concentrating on. The major walked across the piazza up to the big black door of the palazzo, put his briefcase down, took a piece of chalk out of his pocket, and wrote on a panel of the door, "Victor Joppolo, Major USA, Amgott, Town of Adano." Then both men went inside and up some marble stairs, looking all around them as they climbed. They took a turn and went through a door marked Podesta. The office on the other side of that door took Victor Joppolo's breath away. In the first place, it was so very big. It must have been 70 feet long and 30 feet wide. The ceiling was high, and the floor was marble. After all the poverty which had shouted and begged in the streets, this room was stiflingly rich. The furniture was of heavy black Italian style, which seemed to be bursting with some kind of creatures, half man, half fruit. The curtains were of rich brocade, and the walls were lined with a silken stuff. The door, where the men came in, was near as the southwest corner of the room. To the right of it, a huge table stood with some maps and aerial photos on it, which had been left behind by the officers of an American regiment who had used the room as a command post early in the morning. There was an incongruous bundle of Italian brooms in the corner. The south wall had a double white door in the middle, and on the other side a huge sofa bound in black leather. Then on the opposite side, facing the street and giving onto the palace the place of speeches, there were two big French doors. Scattered along the wall and pressed against it as if frightened were a heavy table, several throne-like chairs of various sizes, another couch, and in the far corner a white stone statue of a saint. She, besides being decently swathed in a marble scarf, had a piece of American Signal Corps telephone wire wound around her neck, and on its way from the nearest French door to the desk, where a field phone had evidently been set up. To the left of the door, there was a tremendous bookcase with a glass front. Beyond it, an enamel washstand with a big stone pitcher beside it. And then, a weirdly ornate upright piano. Up to the right, over the two sofas, there was a huge picture of Italy's King Victor Emmanuel and his queen, facing each other in sympathetic misery. On the outside wall there was a picture of Crown Prince Umberto, smiling at everything that had happened in the room. Over the saint of the telephone there was a photograph of Princess Marie Jose of Belgium, Umberto's wife, dressed as a Red Cross nurse. Above the bookcase there was a great dustless square where a picture had been, but was not now. All this, both the heavy furniture and the ironic pictures, seemed placed there merely to press the eye toward the opposite end of the room, toward the biggest picture in the room, a romantic oil of a group of men pointing into the distance, and especially toward the desk. The scale of everything in that room was so big that hugeness in the desk did not seem unnatural. It was of wood. On either end there were wooden bas-relief of fasces, and of the phrase Anno 15, for the 15th year of fascism, or 1937, when the desk was presumably made. Under the desk there was a wooden scroll-work footstool. "Say," said Major Joppolo, "this is okay." "Looks like the office in Mussolini's," Borth said. "Come to think of it, you look quite a lot like Mussolini, sir, except the mustache. Will you be okay with you to be Mussolini?" "Cut the kidding," the major said. "Let's look around." They went out through the white door at the end of the room and walked through several offices, all of which were crowded with desks and files and bookcases. The files had not been emptied or even disturbed. "Good," said Borth. "Lists of names, everyone registered and all their records. It'll be easy for us here." The major said, "What's the difference between my office and these others?" "What a difference. It's shameful." All Borth said was, "Your office?" When the two went back into the big office, there was an Italian there. He had evidently been hiding in the building. He was a small man with a shiny linen office coat on, with his collar buttoned, but no tie. This ball Italian gave the fascist salute and, with an eager face, said in Italian, "Welcome to the Americans! Leave Roosevelt! How glad am I that you have arrived! For many years I have hated the fascists!" The major said in Italian, "Who are you?" The little man said, "Zitto, Giovanni! I have been well known as an anti-fascist." Major Joppolo said, "What do you do?" Zito said, "I greet the Americans." Borth said in an Italian, which was heavily accented, "Idiot, what was your job before disembarkation?" Zito said, "Zito, Giovanni, ascio to the Palazzo di Sita, native of Adano." Major Joppolo said, "You were the usher here? Every day from 8 to 8. Why did you work for the fascists if you hated them?"
"I have hated them for many years. I am well known as an anti-fascist. I have lived under a great suspicion."
The major said, "Usher, I love the truth. You will find that out. If you lie to me, you will be in very serious trouble. Do not lie to me. If you were a fascist, you were a fascist. There is no need to lie." Zito said,
"One had to eat. One had to earn a living. I have 6 children.
Major Joppolo said, "So you were a fascist. Now you will have to learn in democracy. You will be my usher." The little Zito was delighted. The major said, "Do not salute me that way." Zito bowed and said,
The fascist, the salute. No, sir."
Major Joppolo said, "Do not bow. There's no need to grovel here. I'm only a major. Borth here is a sergeant. Are you a man?" Little Zito was getting very mixed up.
"No, sir,"
he said cautiously. Then he saw by the major's expression that he should have said yes, and he did. The major said, "You may greet me by shaking my hand. You will greet Sergeant Borth in the same way." Borth said, and his expression showed that he was teasing the Italian, "First I will find out if he's a dangerous fascist." Little Zito did not know whether to laugh or cry. He was frightened, but he was also flattered by these men. He said,
"I will never lie to you, Mr. Major. I am anti-fascist, Mr. Sergeant. I will be usher here."
Major Joppolo said, "Be here at 7 o'clock each morning."
"7 o'clock,"
said Zito. A brief burst of machine gun and rifle fire echoed from distant streets. Zito cringed. Borth said, "You are perhaps a man, but you are also frightened." Major Joppolo said, "Has it been bad here?" Zito started jabbering about the bombardments and the air raids.
"We are very hungry,"
he said, when it cooled down a little.
"For 3 days we have not had bread. All of the important ones ran away and left me here to guard the palazzo. The stink of the dead is very bad, especially in the Piazza San Angelo. Some people are sick because the drivers of the water carts have not had the courage to get the water here for 7 days because of the plains along the road. We do not believe in victory, and our bell is gone."
Major Joppolo said, "Your bell?"
Zito said, "Our bell, which was 700 years old. Mussolini took it. It rang with a good tone each 1/4 hour. Mussolini took it to make rifle barrels or something. The town was very angry. Everyone begged the Monsignor, who is the uncle of the mayor, to offer some church bells instead, but the Monsignor is uncle of the mayor. He is not the sort to desecrate churches. He says it meant we lost our bell, and only 2 weeks before you came. Why did you not come sooner?"
"Where was this bell?"
"Right here,"
Zito pointed over his head.
"The whole building a tingle when it rang."
Major Joppolo said to Borth, "I saw the framework for the bell up on the tower. Did you?" Then he added to Zito, "That is your reason for wanting us to come sooner, is it?" Zito was careful.
"Partly,"
he said. Borth said, "Usher, if you were a good fascist, you would be able to tell me why there is a big blank space up there on the wall over which there used to hang a picture.
It is easy to see by the square of dust that there was a rather large picture there. Zito smiled and said, "Oh, the picture that does not exist. It has been destroyed."
Borth said, "You're not hiding it in the basement. You're not afraid the Americans will be driven out by your German allies and that your leader will return someday and see the square of dust on the wall and ask questions?"
Zito said, "It is destroyed, I swear it. I cannot lie before the Mr. Major."
Major Joppolo said, "Usher, what is that big picture over my desk?" This was where the little Zito told a beautiful lie. The picture was of a group of men in antique costume, one of them by expression of face, position in the picture, and by the accident of being the only one in the sunlight, of all the men was obviously their leader, and he was pointing out the side of the picture to the left. Zito thought quickly and said,
"That, Mr. Major, is a Columbus discovering America."
Zito smiled, because it was a beautiful lie. Major Joppolo did not discover for 3 weeks that the picture was really a scene from the Sicilian Vespers, that bloody revolt in which the Sicilians mounted against a previous invader. Now Major Joppolo said in English, more or less to himself, "It's a nice picture. I wonder how old it is. Maybe it's by somebody famous." The major went to the desk, pulled out the high back chair and sat in it, carefully putting his feet on the scrollwork footstool. Borth said,
"How does it feel, Duce?"
The major said, "There's so much to do. I hardly know where to begin." Borth said, "I know what I must do. I've got to find the office of the Fascist Party to see if I can find more records. May I take Mr. Usher and look for the fascio?" "Go ahead, Borth," the major said. When the two had left, Major Joppolo opened his briefcase and took out some papers. He put them in a neat pile on the desk in front of him and began to read. "Instructions to civil affairs officers, first day, enter the city with the first column, cooperate with the CIC in placing guards and seizing records, place all food warehouses, enemy food dumps, wholesale food concerns, and other major food stocks under guard, secure an estimate from local food distributors of the number of days of food supplies which are on hand or available, make a report through channels on food situation in your area, see that the following establishments are placed under guard or protection, foundries, machine shops, electrical works, chemical plants, flour mills, breweries, cement plants, refrigeration plants, ice plants, warehouses, olive oil refineries, sulfur refineries, tunny oil mills, soap manufacturing plants, and many other important establishments. Locate and make available to port authorities all known local pilots." And the list went on and on. When he had read 3 pages, Mayor Joppolo looked at his wristwatch. It was 11:30. Almost half of this first day was gone. He took the sheets of instructions up from the desk and tore them in half, and tore the halves in quarters, and crumbled up the quarters and threw them in the cane wastebasket under the desk. Then he sat and stared out the nearest French door into the empty street for a long time. He looked tired and defeated. He stirred and reached into his briefcase again and took out a small black loose-leaf notebook. The pages were filled with notes on his AMGOT school lectures, notes on civilian supply and public safety, on public health, on finance, on agriculture, industry, utilities, transportation, and all of the businesses of an invading authority. But he passed all these pages by and turned to the page marked "Notes to Joppolo from Joppolo," and he read, "Don't make yourself cheap. Always be accessible to the public. Don't play favorites. Speak Italian whenever possible. Don't lose your temper. When plans fall down, improvise." That was the one he wanted. When plans fall down, improvise. Plans for this first day were in the wastebasket. They were absurd. Enough was set forth in those plans to keep a regiment busy for a week. Now Victor Joppolo felt on his own, and he no longer looked tired. He got up briskly, went out onto the balcony, and saw that there were two flagpoles there. He went back in, reached in his briefcase and pulled out two flags, one American, the other British. He tucked the Union Jack under his arm as he walked out again, felt for the toggles on the American flag, mounted them on the halyard on the left-hand flagpole, and raised the flag. Before the flag reached the top of the pole, there were five Italians in the piazza. Before he had the British flag attached to the halyard on the right-hand pole, there were 20. By the time he had both flags up, 40 people were shouting, "Buongiorno! Buongiorno! Americano!" He waved to them and went back into his office. Now he was happy and quick. He took up his briefcase again, reached in, and pulled out a pile of proclamations. He took them over to the table by the door, set the leftover maps and photos aside, and arranged the proclamations in order on the table. While he was on his way back to his desk, there was a knock on the door. "Come in," he said in Italian. The door opened. A man came in whose appearance was vaguely familiar to Major Joppolo. The major realized later that he had seen not this man, but several who looked just like him in bad American movies. He was the type of the second-rate Italian gangster, the small fellow in the gang who always stood behind the boss and who always took the rap. He had a bald head, a weak mouth. He had a scar across his cheek. His eye was furtive, and he had the appearance of being willing but in need of instructions. He said in English,
You pull up the flag. War's a finisher here in Adano, huh?"
The major said, "Yes, who are you?" The Italian said, "I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I've been here 3 years. You got work for me?" Major Joppolo said, "What's your name?" The Italian said, "Ribaldo Giuseppe. In Cleveland, call me Joe." Major Joppolo said, "What can you do?" Ribaldo said, "I'm a good American. I hate these fascisti. I could do a good job for you." Major Joppolo said, "If you are such a good American, why did you leave the States?" Ribaldo said, "I'm a kick out." "Why?" "I'm no passport." "How did you get in then?"
"I got plenty of friends in Cleveland and Buffalo."
"What did you do in the States?"
"Oh, I work here, I work there."
Major Joppolo was pleased with Ribaldo for not trying to lie about his illegal entry and repatriation. He said, "Okay, I'll hire you. You'll be my interpreter. You don't speak Italian?"
Yes, but there'll be... Yes.